A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care-to-be-great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody. Welcome on into another edition of Unrivaled right here. 97.5 1280 The Zone. The Zone Sports Network. Powered by KSLSports.com. Scott Mitchell across from me, former NFL quarterback. We're going to be speaking with an NFL slash professional sports slash professional broadcasting slash coach agent. Somebody who's been in the
just an agent.
I know, but he's been. No, I'm saying he's an agent to all those groups.
He's an agent to the stars.
Agent to the sports stars.
Yes.
Scott's former current agent. I mean, what do you do? If you need him, you call him, and he's your agent again.
He's just my friend.
So at this point now, we're going to get some we're going to be dipping in with Tony Agnone in just about an hour. And I'm just thrilled to ask him questions.
So am I.
About he has clients right now who are interviewing for NFL jobs, things like that. I want to know what the landscape looks like in that type of situation in 2022. But we're going to start things off right now with a discussion about BYU jumping. Yesterday we had this discussion about what their schedule is going to look like going forward. And then during our show yesterday or after the show yesterday, there was an interaction with the Boise State athletic director that gets us to our first conversation about who do you want to see on that schedule? Who's going to get cut off the schedule going forward? It's right here where we start the show every day. It's with the cut. Let's do it.
The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
Now, the cut brought to you by Sound Sleep Medical. Do you snore at night? Are you currently using a CPAP machine to treat sleep apnea? Sound Sleep Medical can improve your life. Visit soundsleepmedical.com today.
I don't snore at night. I snore in the afternoon.
During show prep, mostly.
Yes, yes.
You know, if you're snoring during show prep, should I be worried about the audience then?
No.
Because I'm like, Scott, check this out. No. What it is if Scott falls asleep during show prep, the rule is you let him sleep because you know what that is? That's like a bear hibernating.
Yeah.
He's got all this energy.
Power nap.
Start getting ready for the show. So what type
of... In fact, I think they should require it. Every job, it should be an afternoon power nap.
The siesta, man.
Yeah.
You got to get to the siesta. What type of non-conference schedule should BYU start building in the future? That's a question that kind of has come up over the last couple of days.
Kind of a snobby one.
That's where it is now, because now a lot of the schedule is burned up by the conference stuff. And so the Big 12 is going to take away from a lot of it. So then you have to balance not having a totally impossible schedule. You don't want to have three or four of the games that you're going to be playing, Tennessee, USC, Arkansas, and, fill in the blank. I've said in the past the FCS games I want to see totally go away. But I'm also not in favor of totally shooting yourself in the foot at the beginning of your season and just and killing this thing.
I think you should. I think BYU should still try to get the toughest schedule they possibly can. I think they should try to get all Power 5 schools. I really do. Maybe you keep the rivalry games, whatever. The game, though, that's interesting to me, this is the one, is Boise State, right? Like, BYU is just like, I guess we're just going to have to end this one, right? Let's just end this whole deal here. And I think Boise State said, you're going to break up with us, so I'm going to break up with you before you break up with me.
No, I think that the athletic director, his comments were, they're going to the Big 12. Obviously, we want to see this game come back. I mean, that their future is what it is because they're going to the Big 12, and that's what it is. But they hope that that game comes back. BYU fans should hope that this game comes back. Any good game.
Why?
Because any game in the
Boise State's not really a rivalry. Boise State is not really
it's
a rivalry.
It's more of a rivalry than Utah State. In terms
no,
of on the field,
it,
in terms
no.
of a win that BYU fans want, yes.
No.
Boise State is a game. Are you kidding?
It's a stopgap for their time in independence purgatory.
The honest truth is this game has actually been one that has gotten good over the last 5 or 8 years because BYU started to make it a little bit more competitive, and Boise State was the original BCS buster, right? That's what people kind of throw that on them where they go, hey, this is the team that is in obscurity up in Idaho, and they're beating the big teams, and they're showing up, and that's who you wanted to play. BYU would lose to them almost every time at the beginning, and so now you look at it and go, okay, this thing has turned around. And I know that Boise State isn't the Chris Peterson Boise State team, but I think that there are a lot of people out there who would prefer a Boise State game over Utah State game. And I don't totally blame them.
How could you say that after what Utah State did last year?
This was the best year they ever had, Scott. It wasn't.
It's the beginning of something amazing.
Is it?
Like Blake Anderson's gonna coach there for two more seasons, and it's going to be
epic. Oh, Scott, you're basic.
I'm saying that
you're describing exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, right.
He'll be here for a year and a half before he takes that job at the SEC.
Boise State now is BYU 11 years ago when Utah got into the Pac-12. They're the jilted, bitter, we didn't get in, and we're just going to
They probably could have gotten in somewhere.
Well, if they could have, why didn't they then?
That's a good question.
I mean, why not have? I mean, if you're trying to get a different presence in the Big 12, why not bring in a team like Boise State and BYU? If it's such a great rivalry, boom, there's your two teams out west.
Would Boise State be good enough for the Pac-12 to add to make a Pac-14?
Well, you got to add someone else.
No, I know, maybe an Air Force. They've got Colorado on the books.
They've
so it's
cheapened
not like,
the Pac-10 as
be
much
careful
as,
now as by adding Utah and well, Colorado.
Well, yeah, they watered down the talent. They basically and now look the Pac-10. This was this pompous very very arrogant. We're a big deal. Back in the day, and now they'll let anyone in. I mean, if you're going to let Air Force in, you let anyone in. They can't go past 12.
Okay.
Or they can, but they can't do it with Mountain West teams.
Let's just look at the next 2 years of BYU's schedule, and you can keep three of these games, because I don't know if they're going to do the eight-team conference schedule yet. I'm not sure if that's going to be the future for the Big 12. Did they say that was going to be? We don't know yet. But let's say it's just three. Let's say they go to nine conference games.
I think what's going to happen with that really quick, I think every conference is going to go – they're all going to go to some standard where everyone's playing apples to apples. And I think an eight-game conference schedule – if you're having a conference championship, definitely.
Well, okay, so here's what it looks like for 2023. Here are the biggest names on that schedule. Tennessee, Utah State, Arkansas – and USC. Those are the biggest teams. There are others in there, but I don't think a Fresno State game or a UNLV. UCF's already in their conference, so maybe that ends up being a game that they
in 2023, they're not going to be, right?
Yeah, they will. 2023, yes. That's the first year.
Oh, no, wait. We're 2022.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Get your year straight, Mitchell. Come on.
Wow. When did that happen? when did 2022 come around?
So USC, Rice. Oh, no, sorry, not Rice. It's not. I mean, Rice is on there, but that's one. Yeah. That's an easy one. You go, sorry. Arkansas,
isn't
Utah
Rice
State.
A weird name though?
Of course it is.
It's just like Rice.
Tennessee, Utah State, Arkansas, and USC.
We go to Corn University.
If you, will you stop it?
Right.
But out of those teams, Utah State gets the axe because if you're BYU, you'd want to play Tennessee, Arkansas, and USC. Or is that too difficult? For the sake of rivalries, so, would you want to keep Utah State and bag Arkansas? Or you would never pass up Tennessee or USC. That Tennessee game is in Provo, so you got to have that game. You want that game. That is one that's super important for you in terms of brand recognition, in terms of being seen on national television. SC needs to stay. But between Arkansas and Utah State, Is that
if I'm going to do this schedule right here, I'm getting rid of Arkansas. Arkansas is not that irrelevant.
That's an SEC team who actually is pretty decent this year.
No, no. I don't think you get rid of the Utah State game is what I'm saying.
Okay.
If you can only have three non-conference games, I get rid of Arkansas. You have Tennessee is the first game of the year. Like you said, it's in Provo, fine. But you have to have some kind of in-state rivalry game. And the Utah State game has some value to it. Are they at Utah State again?
Yes, they are. Or no, I mean, that's next year. Yeah, because this year they'll be in Provo, then they'll go
USC
back up.
In a year. That's going to be a heck of a program.
It's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, but you want that, though. Yes. You want, because you want to be able to be playing a quality opponent with some national presence. And by that time, I would think, by the end of two seasons from now, USC should be rolling. And USC could, you know, they could be ranked in the single digits at that time.
You should thank your lucky stars.
Why are we saying this about USC? Like, we're making this assumption
that they're going to be
just
good?
Because, you know, Lincoln Riley shows up.
You've taught me that, Scott. It's exactly because Lincoln Riley showed up and they got all those players to come with.
Well, not only that, but it's USC. Someone woke
up. The Pac-12 needs.
Someone poked the bear.
Yes.
Woke up the bear.
The Pac-12 needs USC to be good. I think it's better for Utah to have a competitive team there at the top.
Well, it is Utah's rival, so yeah.
So 2024. So remember how we were talking about how tough 2023 is going to be? 2024, this is when you look to the heavens and say thank you so much for the Big 12, because here's what their schedule looked like in 2024. UCF, which, by the way, they might be on the schedule because of the Big 12, right? But Nevada's on the list, Hawaii, Eastern Washington, Wyoming, Georgia Southern, East Carolina, UNLV, and Dixie State. Those are eight garbage games.
Yeah, and 2024 is weak.
2024, you better be glad.
That's a 12-win season.
That's
right
an
there.
Easy thing. You just subtract those eight. Look, those eight teams, because then you leave NC State. Okay, that's an ACC team. That's that'd be a fun game for them. You leave Utah State on the schedule, and you leave Utah on the schedule. Okay. Those are the teams that you keep on that schedule.
I don't know that Utah play BYU in 2024.
Oh, so who's big timing who at that point?
I think
they both look at each other and they go, "We don't need you. No, we don't need you." Well, fine.
It's the Cold War. It's the Cold War of Power Five.
It is
starting again.
It's exactly what it is. But I mean, that game, everybody, once it comes back onto the schedule, you've got to play that game. No one is going to allow you in either fan base. Again, the fan base is BYU wants that game because they want to have whatever chance they can have to beat Utah. Utah pretends like they don't need that game anymore, but it's been pretty fun for them to beat BYU. They have owned BYU. That one loss this last year gets stuck in BYU's mind because they don't want to bring up the other previous nine.
Yeah, or I don't know, the last 17.
It's been tough.
Yeah.
It's been a tough road.
Here's the one in 2024 if you're BYU. This is the game that you're excited to get rid of, just right off the bat. Wyoming. At Wyoming.
Yes.
You're doing cartwheels.
Never do it. But the thing is that between Boise State, because what I've just given you is eight games both of those years. Okay? Not eight. 11 games on those schedules for both of those years. Adding Boise State. Because I'm only saying.
What you're saying is it's an eight game. You're assuming it's an eight game conference schedule for BYU.
Right. So if you add a fourth game on there, Boise State would be an easy one. It's regional. It's close. Yeah. It's a fun rivalry.
You're still back on Boise State?
I love Boise State.
Oh, come on. It's not a rivalry.
I would take Boise State over Utah State. Yes. And it's not a diss on the Aggies at all, because I think that's an important game, but I don't think it's as important for BYU as Boise State.
And you don't want to diss on the Aggies because they got good ice cream. You just don't mess with ice cream.
I'm not going to get into that debate because,
yeah, whatever.
We've been burned. We've been burned on that. People show up more for the ice cream fight conversation than they do about Utah State versus Boise State. Which one BYU would rather play?
All right.
Two creameries are always in a constant battle.
I think you're living in the past.
Always, Scott.
No, with the Boise State thing, I really do. I just have a sense that the era of Boise State and its bowl busting. It's blue turf. It's relevance. For some reason,
on the decline.
It feels to me like it's on the decline. That's the only reason I'm saying. Look, I don't know what Utah State's going to be. I don't know if they're going to be good or bad or whatever. I have no idea. But what I do know is they're an in-state school, and it's been around for a long, long time.
I'm going to text my Boise State fans real quick that I know, my friends that are Boise State fans.
You mean your one fan?
No, I have a couple. But Bam from General RV is the most annoying. Yeah. He's the most annoying about it.
Oh, he's dying right now with what I just said.
I know.
The reason he's
they're
dying
in the decline, and he knows it.
Because it's true. What I'm saying is actually true.
The guy owns an orange tuxedo, orange and blue tuxedo.
Like, so I'm trying to be positive here for the schedule.
You don't think
I think you can find better teams. I really do.
Do you need to go out and find better teams, or do you add Utah State as an every year game that you can play?
I'll just tell you right now, I'm not thrilled about Eastern Washington.
No, that's out. Like I told you, FCS teams. They have two FCS teams on the dang 2024 schedule.
What kind of honor code is this at BYU if they just make these agreements and then they just like cancel?
Oh, quit it. They put in all their agreements. If we join a Big 12,
do you know what's going to happen? Well, they just did this after they knew they were in the Big 12, and they knew this was out in the future.
Here's
and so
the thing.
They add these things. Look, people are going to start calling them Notre Dame.
Get rid of the FCS opponents, and if you have two on a schedule, that is garbage. And
it looks like the whole schedule in 2024 is.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Directional Carolina, East Carolina, Georgia Southern again. Gosh, why? Wow. Get those guys out of here.
Dixie State.
Is it Dixie State? Utah Tech, buddy.
Utah Tech Southern. Mm-hmm. Southern Tech.
Southern Utah Tech. I still don't know what we're supposed to call them yet.
I don't either.
Has the governor decreed what we have to call them?
I don't know.
Because it was going to be Polytechnic Institute.
I mean, they can tell us not to wear a mask. They could at least tell us what the school name is.
We've got a mask mandate. Yes, but can we have a school name mandate?
Just want to know what to call it.
Just tell me.
Just tell me what to call it.
Is it they got rid of Polytechnic because that
what
was.
What pronoun are we going
by
today?
Scott
That's
Mitchell.
All I want to know.
That's too hard for Scott Mitchell to pronounce. you can't use that
oh,
one.
Oh, Polytech? What? Yeah.
You tried to get through it.
No.
Polytech. Oh, my goodness.
Not doing that one.
BYU, keep Utah State when it's prudent. Book Boise State when you can. Make it happen. Don't do the thing where you lock these teams out forever. Don't do it.
Can I tell you what I woke up with this morning? Thinking about this.
Yes.
And about BYU. Okay. I have my clearest thoughts in the morning, by the way. Yeah. I remember having a discussion on this show about, and I was sincere about this, where I'm not sure that BYU is ever going to be relevant in football again. I remember having the discussion, you know, you should get a football team at UVU and let them rent out Lavelle Edwards Stadium. I remember
that's
us
how
having,
dire. That's how
I
dire
remember
that
how bad this was. And now here we are. We're sitting here. And we're like with the scissors,
which
and we're just like cut and paste
we,
and get rid of everyone.
Teams should
and
we
forget this whole
these.
Thing?
Yeah,
yeah. I
know how Utah
I
fans
have to
feel
tell
now.
You. This, if there is ever a phoenix like rising out of the ashes in college football, it is BYU.
Yeah, but
I
you
mean,
asked
with,
Tom
with
Holmo.
Where, with where they were.
You asked Tom Holmo, Brian Santiago, Coach Satake. It's like we were always here. We were always on the rise.
Yeah, I hear you. But I'm just telling you, 2 years ago when basically it was like, nope, that team canceled. Right. I'm like, BYU's not even they're going to have two games this year.
Hey. Give thanks tonight to Oklahoma and Texas again.
They did an amazing job.
Start burning those Texas and Oklahoma candles to say thank you. All right? That's where it needs to go. Let's take a break.
I was just going to say, people want to go. I mean, BYU fills up their stadium.
Yeah.
Like, good for BYU.
Yeah.
Serious.
Let's take that break. We'll come back. We've got more to go right here on Unrivaled. It's 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Stay with us.
Attention. This is Unrivaled. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell. Just having a discussion about who to cut off of the BYU schedule going forward. BYU fan must love that now. Like you were saying, Scott, it just feels good now to be in that mode for them to be able to say, oh, we don't need you on our schedule.
Well, when you can think strategically and not think drastically or desperately, yeah, it's awesome for BYU.
Now let's shift things over a little bit to the conversation about the transfer portal, specifically as it pertains to the Pac-12. Joining us on the program right now, Antonio Morales, USC beat writer for The Athletic, joining us on the program. What's going on, Antonio? Thanks for being with us.
Nothing much, guys. Just staying busy with all this transfer stuff. A lot of player movement.
Yeah, I was going to say, you in particular, because USC's been quite busy. They have the most of the transfer. They have the most transfers who've committed out of the transfer portal. The transfer portal has not just changed all of college football, but certainly for USC in this tumultuous time with Lincoln Riley coming in, it's a massive deal for them.
Yeah, definitely. And Lincoln Riley kind of warned everyone that he was going to really overhaul this roster during the early signing period. He said as many as 35 spots could be turned over. They've lost, I think, 16 players have entered the portal since he took over the job, and that was expected. Everyone knew this, whoever the new coach was going to be, whether it was Lincoln Riley, Matt Campbell, or whoever, they were going to turn over this roster. So 16 players have entered the portal since Riley took over. I think they've lost another six or seven to the NFL draft, or, you know, just declaring early. And then they've added 12 transfers. Roster is going to look a lot different this coming fall.
It's going to look completely different. Wow, that's pretty surprising there. So with all that turnover, what is the realistic expectation for USC next year? Can you really turn it around, and can you really compete?
Yeah, that's the thing I'm trying to wrap my head around right now. Last year, I picked Utah to win the Southland, did. They ended up winning the conference just because I was very confident in their lines and how they were going to hold up. And this year, I'd still pick Utah, but I'm still kind of wrapping my head around, like, how do you evaluate this USC team? Because it's not the usual, like, oh, they're returning 16 starters and we know what they have. Like, we know some of what Travis Dye is, obviously a really good running back, and he's going to be an upgrade for them. And Austin Jones is getting up at running back too. And they've added some decent receivers, and they've added a couple linebackers and some players here and there. And who knows? They might add Caleb Williams as well. It's still kind of wait and see. But we've never seen them play together. We've never seen them.
Right.
We've never seen most of these players in Lincoln Riley's scheme, except for Caleb Williams, if he does come, and Mario Williams, who they also got from Oklahoma. So it's really hard to kind of put expectations on them, just because we haven't seen them play together before, and
right.
It's a whole new thing, and it's year one. So like, I would think they would have the talent to win the Pac-12 South and compete for a Pac-12 title. But will they have that chemistry and that continuity that Utah will have? It's hard to really say right now.
USC, you know, gets. I think the transfer portal kind of rankings seem hilarious to me. You know, when you look and you go, it seems arbitrary to rank anything because one, these guys haven't played anywhere, and it's yet to be seen because the transfer portal has been feast or famine in terms of success or failure. I mean, it's mm-hmm. very, very like Utah has seen both ends with Cam Rising, who's come in and won a Pac-12 championship for them at quarterback, versus you've got Jake Bentley, who came in 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It was a flop. And then you've got, of course, last year, Charlie Brewer with the same thing. And so what are people – are coaches loving the portal? Is Lincoln – I think some coaches really like it. Is Lincoln Riley one of those guys who isn't just going to overhaul it with a bunch of guys that play with him in Oklahoma, but as you look at it like, this is a new resource for me. It's better than just recruiting high school kids.
I think he's using it – in the past, he used it more selectively. I think when Tennessee had that massive kind of roster exodus last year, new coach, and the NCAA stuff, he kind of poached from Tennessee last year, and he got some good players from Tennessee at Oklahoma. And obviously, before that, he got Jalen Hurts from Alabama. And I think he's used it selectively in the past. I think this year, at USC, it's a little bit different because the roster was down in a lot of different positions. So I think he's been more willing to use it to help fill some holes this year. I don't think it'll be the way he does it moving forward, just because I think they're going to have a really, really good recruiting class in 2023. They already have, I think, two or three five-star commitments in that class. So I think that'll be the way he builds right now. But I think for coaches that need help in the short term, I think they really love it just because they know a little bit more about what they're getting from each player as opposed to a high school player. Well, that they'll have to project and different things like that. UCLA's, I think they've been one of the better schools in the Pac-12 that's used the transfer portal to their benefit, and it helps with a guy like Zach, with Zach Charbonnet and some other players. So I think in for short-term fixes, I think coaches like it.
I'm curious, you know, the Trojan faithful are how are they feeling about Lincoln Riley? Like, are they kind of, especially with kind of this rather, you know, just this big mass exodus and I guess
and importing entrance, as well, yeah,
yeah. Are they kind of wait and see? Are they kind of jilted, or where are folks like super excited about him being there and what he can bring back to the program?
Oh, they're all in. It's just still very much honeymoon and all in right now, and they're not doubting anything he's doing right now. So you know, I think after years of Clay Helton, they kind of got beaten down and discouraged. But that fan base is back in full force and with support and in support of Lincoln Riley right now. They like what he's done. The recruiting is something they're encouraged by. The recruiting had kind of slipped in recent years at USC, and they're missing out on a lot of those Southern California kids, the local kids, the high schoolers that were going to in Oregon, or we've even seen guys go to Utah like Clark Phillips and Ethan Calvert and kids like that that they were just he was trying to recruit in Calvert's case, and he was just going picking Utah over them. So I think that had become frustrating for the fans, and I think they're optimistic that Lincoln Riley can kind of stop that from happening as much. And obviously, with the playoff appearances he has and the Heisman Trophy winners, they're just really all excited about him right now.
Well, we hate USC too up here, just for taking, you know, Jackson Darts and the Porter Gustins and, you know, Jay Tefele. There's
hates
some folks in Utah that went down
there. Any
local
talent that goes out the door, Scott gets mad about. But, you know, them's the rules. You know, if you're going to get an offer from USC, you know they have the advantage most of the time. Antonio Morales, USC beat writer for The Athletic, joining us on Unrivaled today. As you see, how long does a changeover like this with Lincoln Riley coming in take for you to see results like competing for a conference championship?
I think realistically, I would think it'd be 2 years or so. Maybe if we get Caleb Williams, that'll change my thinking a little bit, and that might change my thinking for their ceiling in terms of this year. I still think Utah would be probably the preseason favorite in the conference and the Petrol South. I think it'd be a little bit tougher if USC got Caleb Williams, but I would think year two is when USC would probably start competing for a Pac-12 title and things like that. I'm still very wait and see in terms of USC's front
well,
seven.
I know that we have to wait until we see what Caleb Williams is going to do, but I think the rest of us are looking at USC and going, that's a done deal. Is it really not that wrapped up in our minds that Caleb Williams is going to end up at USC?
I think that a lot of the USC fans are like, he's not committed yet. Why hasn't he committed yet? If he's not committing, like, what's been the holdup? And so I think that's gotten people wondering. I think most of the signs pointed towards it, but I mean, he hasn't stated it really anything publicly since he entered the portal and left Oklahoma at the end of January, early December. So he hasn't said much. So it's kind of wait and see. I think most people are expecting it to happen, but I think some of the USC fans are kind of holding their breath a bit to see, you know, if it'll really happen and stuff like that. But I would consider them the favorite, but, you know, we'll see what happens in that regard.
I got to believe these guys are going to go look at all their options, you know, and sure, mm-hmm. It seems like a no-brainer probably end up, but I think to get a chance to actually be recruited all over again and look and kind of now that they've had a taste of college and what it's all about, I would, that'd be awesome. You know, if I'm just thinking if I'm a player in that situation, but You know, I'm also not an idiot, too, and going to USC is, I mean, I don't know that you have better choices there. I'm curious, yeah. with all this exodus and entrance and what import-export that's going on at USC, what do you think is the best get, and what's the biggest loss in all of this?
I think right now for USC, I think the best get is Travis Dye, a solid running back who could really – I think he accounted for 1,600, almost 1,700 total yards last year at Oregon. I think it was almost 1,300 rushing and then 400 receiving. So he's a playmaker, and he's dependable, and he's a tough-nosed runner. So he'd really upgrade that running back room that lost Keontae Ingram, who was a good back last year, almost rushed for 1,000 yards. So I think that's a really good boost to the running back room and someone that Lincoln Riley could use as a rusher and as a receiver out of the backfield. So I think that helped. I think right now the biggest loss, if they don't get Caleb Williams, the biggest loss would probably be Jackson Dart. If they do get Caleb Williams, then I would say it would be Michael Trigg, the tight end, the young tight end they have, who was a highly rated four-star kid from Florida. I know him and Dart have gone on visits together.
Right.
Throughout the past couple of weeks. They went to Ole Miss together. They went to Oklahoma together. So I think right now it would be him. Because I think prior to all this transfer movement, I think Trigg had the most potential of any pass catcher on USC's roster. He's a 6'4", 225-pound kid who, you know, was built like a tight end but had the skills of a receiver. So I think losing him would be tough for that group.
Antonio Morales, USC beat writer for The Athletic, joining us on Unrivaled. Antonio, we appreciate you joining us, and we'd love to talk to you during the season as well. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. What's the headline there? USC beat writer picks Utah to win the Pac-12. Boom.
It's kind of a cool thing, seriously, when you're talking to USC people and they it's not a reluctant thing. It's very factual. They're like, yeah, we feel like Utah. I don't think it's that sandbagging. Oh boy, you guys got a mighty fine football team.
Yeah, no.
It's like, shoot, I think they go, Utah's a better team right now.
Because you don't
want
to say. Here's the thing, though.
I think that's scary for Kyle Whittingham.
What should be really scary is that why wouldn't USC be able to just immediately turn it around?
I know.
Caleb Williams is. I mean, it just seems like it's a slam dunk that he's going there. If that's the factor for right now, they could immediately be good. Then right now they're immediately going to be good.
Yeah.
And so you should be scared out of your mind.
I still
Utah
haven't
fan.
Heard anything up front though, and that's been the issue at USC. Is like, yeah, I mean, USC always had one or two offensive linemen that were just ready-made NFL guys.
No, for sure.
And really good interior defensive lineman as well, and that hadn't been around.
Utah State had the most abysmal season that they've had in a long time, 2 years ago, and turned it around for the most successful season that they've had ever as a program.
Yeah.
You don't think Lincoln Riley could do the same thing? I know that the competition is different in the Pac-12.
I was excited.
Not much different,
yeah, right? I was excited for the Pac-12 and really for USC getting Lincoln Riley. I mean, the conference needs credibility. It needs national credibility, and really having Lincoln Riley. I don't know that there's a better name you could get. There's maybe a couple.
The tough
of guys,
thing is
you know,
to have the two toughest teams that you have in your conference to be in the same division. That's tough. If it ends up being USC and Utah for a minute, that's a tough one because then
Oregon's going to be good.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Utah really has the potential to be the one of the best teams, if not, you know, the favorite over the next couple of seasons.
I'd say that again, would you?
Slow it down. Say it in your sexy voice.
I'm of the whole interview series. That's the thing that I was just like, he keeps saying that Utah is clearly the team to beat. Like, it's clearly the team to beat. Yeah. Like, I don't know that they can beat Utah.
What did
year.
He say, too? Their line is just way better.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually said he picked them. I don't know. They're only a handful of guys.
Let's go back
Utah.
And fact check him. Everybody now, it's good to be like, oh, yeah, I had Utah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I wrote it down. He's all, I wrote it down in my Rose Bowl book. Look.
Yeah. I did
get
that.
Get a forensic handwriting person in here. They'll debunk that you had it written down.
I totally did.
It's like this ink is only, you know, this ink dried a month and a half ago.
You know I do crazy things
I
like
know
that.
You do. You do it like on a bad year too. You're just gonna win the big room. Let's take the break. Hey, when we come back, we've got our what are the odds right around the corner, and we've got our market update as well. But right now, hey, guess what, guys? Valentine's Day is right around the corner. Take care of that special person in your life with flowers from Jimmy's Flowers. Order early for the best selection at jimmysflowers.com or visit them at their brick-and-mortar stores in Bountiful, Layton, Ogden. Jimmy Flowers, jimmysflowers.com. That's jimmysflowers.com. We're going to come back. More to go right here on Unrivaled. 97.5, 1280, The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby!
You'll know exactly. More or less.
What's going to happen? This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. Thanks for being with us on the program today. Hey, market update brought to you by TryDayTrading.com. We throw some numbers out there for you, Scott, because I know you were wondering. The Dow Jones Industrial off 129, down 129
what?
Today.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, man.
Started off strong and then lost some steam there at the end. NASDAQ flat, only up 2 points. S&P 500 down 6 points as well. So there's your market update brought to you by TryDayTrading.com. In the meantime, what are the odds? Goes like this. You heard the voice say it. It's a bit of a gambling game. Not really, because there's nothing to win. But we'll throw out a scenario. You tell us the 0 to 100% chance that thing will or will not happen. And I guess it's 0 to 99. Because we do the jersey game.
Wow.
If you have a jersey that associates with the number, then you get bonus points. But has there ever been a number 100? Probably in the XFL, right? Wasn't there 100?
Do officials have like three numbers?
Sometimes they do, yeah.
They have three numbers?
Yeah. Yeah, but have you ever remembered a referee number in your life?
Not a single one.
No. I love when you don't hear from refs. This last week in the NFL playoffs?
Non-existent.
Great.
Yeah.
Because the week before, they couldn't get out of their own dang way to ruin your football games. So let's start one off here first. I'll roll one to you, Scott.
Okay.
You said it yesterday when we were talking about the newest, the USFL 2.0, or is it 3.0? Starting up after the NFL season gets going here. So spring football is going to be upon us, and I'm going to watch it. But the question you had yesterday was, why can't Salt Lake have one of these smaller league teams? I mean, they had the AAF with the Salt Lake Stallions.
Right.
And you're like, why wouldn't they be there?
You know, arena
league.
So
what are the odds at some point that Salt Lake could get a USFL or an XFL franchise?
So just so I'm clear, the USFL is what the – like it used to be like the Donald Trump League, right?
That was the Steve Young League, too.
And the Steve Young and a lot of people.
Jim Kelly.
And the XFL, that's Vince McMahon. That's like He Hate Me and all that stuff.
Right.
Like, kind of on your jersey.
That's the one where they're like
– they kind of have fun. It's a little bit –
they like had like a dodgeball start to the game where they put the ball in the middle and they gave everyone knives.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you think? Because it really would. This would be a place where it could
It's so
work.
Disappointing to me because these just never work. And I want them to work so bad. I need to be less – like, I really care.
Stop being so optimistic about things,
I really
Scott.
Do.
Jeez.
I just need to be pessimistic and hopefully it'll actually happen.
See, the rest of us
I
have
just
been,
think it would be fun.
The rest of us have been selling everybody and situations around us short forever so that we don't have expectations.
Here's the thing. I love – we went to the Grizzlies game. I enjoyed going to that.
So much fun.
Right? And it's minor league hockey. I enjoy – the Bees games are just – phenomenal.
Love it.
Love those.
Best
minor leagues,
yes.
Right? And then, I mean, I like to go to RSL matches as well. I
you
do.
You called it a match. I'm proud of you.
On the pitch, yes. Yeah. What is it? It's not out of bounds? I learned this on Ted Lasso. Well,
oh,
I
yeah.
can't remember. What was
no,
the,
no, no.
It's throw it in or something like that.
No,
I don't
I can't
know. There's
remember.
There's some term to it anyways.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing.
It's a touch. It's out of touch. No, you're out of touch. Am I out of touch? Yeah. It's something about touch.
No, that's Hall & Oates.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
I'm gonna say.
Please give me.
I'm gonna say it's a little low.
Okay.
I'll say. I'll say Gary Danielson 15%.
Okay. All right.
Bart I was going to say Earl Morrill.
Yeah, yeah. Bart Starr was a 15. Bart Starr. I'm going to go with a, because he played in the USFL, Steve Young, 8% chance.
Oh, that's so obvious.
Okay. Warren Moon, 1%. He played in the USFL, too.
No, he didn't.
I thought he did. Oh, he's Canadian.
Canadian. See, Canadian's a whole different thing.
Hey, bring a Canadian team.
So you think it's really,
we'll
really,
it
though?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
All right, here, I got
because
one.
Because we're jaded here. We have a really tough time.
I got one.
Give me one.
All right, the Utah Jazz, of course, they're in action tonight against the NBA leading Phoenix Suns. Without Donovan and Rudy, what are the odds that the Utah Jazz win tonight against the Suns?
They put on quite a show the other night in Phoenix. When I say quite a show, with none of their starters, with no, you know, the young lineup that they had, seven guys in double figures, they had quite the night of energy. I think that the Jazz's fortune turn around tonight. And I think that they get the W, and that really kind of puts a shot in the arm of the superstars to go, I can't wait to get back to this team. See how what I'm doing here? The old Scott Mitchell positive spin on things.
You're being way
optimistic. Think it's happening. I'm going to say a – let me see here. I got to think of a high jersey number for the – yeah, let's give it a 87%. Who was 87? I'm not going to ask you. I can't ask you.
87, Johnny Morton.
Oh, yeah, Johnny Morton, 87%. Yeah. You threw to Johnny Morton for quite some time. So there you go. That's an easy one for you to remember. By the way, the number 100 is worn by Chivas striker in the Mexican Soccer League, Adolfo Bautista.
Wow. There Thank you. You. Glad to know that now. Here's my take on this.
You can't. Come on, man.
I don't know that. I mean, it's impressive you did
Adolfo Bautista.
That means nothing to me.
Okay.
Like, it really, it's like, okay, great. I mean, and you speak his name well.
Adolfo Bautista.
Yeah. I'm going to say that the Jazz winning.
It's game day, Scott.
Yeah. I'm going to say Steve Young, USFL, number 8.
Wow.
8%.
I thought you were just going to be positive and say Mark Eaton, 53%.
No.
Not on that one, huh?
I'm reserving that for when the Jazz actually come back.
Oh, boy. See, when we talk with Locke a little bit later, I'm excited to I need to get a boost of optimism from Locke.
Yeah.
Might not get it, but I'm hoping that it's there. What are the odds that Caleb Williams, whose name has now been floated out to go other places, Wisconsin cropped up. We just heard Antonio Morales, who covers USC, bring this whole thing up. And the fact that he hasn't committed yet, I wonder about it. So what are the odds that Caleb Williams does end up signing with USC?
I'm not worried that he hasn't signed. I mean, it's like,
let these kids enjoy the process.
Nah, it's
right?
Like Jackson Dart. Fine, you want to fly me down to Ole Miss, Jackson Dart. You know, you want me to, you know, I'll go to all these different places. I'll listen. I'll massage this. I'll figure this out. You know, probably better than I did when I was in high school, actually. But Caleb Williams going to Wisconsin
to hand the ball off
is the like, worst mistake you could. How many quarterback? What is it? Russell Wilson? Russell Wilson may be the only quarterback.
He was NC
ever,
State and
ever from Wisconsin. I mean, I don't know of a quarterback that like that's quarterback like you know
purgatory.
Mm. I hope he doesn't, and I'm gonna say, Mark Eaton 53%. Just
you know who
was
a quarterback at Wisconsin? Daryl Bevel, right?
Daryl
Bevel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, see what happened to him.
I'm trying to think of the best ones ever. Best Wisconsin quarterbacks, Badgers of all time.
See, I can't think of
Russell Wilson, Brooks Bollinger, the
big drop off.
The names fall off. Oh, hey, Daryl Bevel, number 3 on the list.
Yeah. And he's fine.
Scott Tolzien.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, you have. He played for the Packers.
Okay, congratulations.
John Stocko.
Look, you got to say
Jim Sorge.
Hang on.
Jack Cohn. I can't believe none of these names are ringing a bell.
When you say play, you have to define what play means.
Here's my favorite one, too.
Like he was on the roster in the preseason for a hot minute?
Randy Wright. Not Randy White.
Yeah. Randy Wright. Randy Wright is wrong.
Yep.
I don't know who any of those
are. Let's take a break. Kurt Phillips, man.
That's all Caleb Williams needs to do. Yeah. Just look at that list and say, no, thank you. And it's like, I don't even want to be the top of
my
that list.
My favorite part is two of the guys on the list are best quarterback ever, and it has them in baseball uniforms. Yeah. that's probably an indicator.
I mean, things Wisconsin is an amazing place.
Yeah, that's not a quarterback school.
But it's not a
it's
quarterback
not QBU.
School.
No. Let's take the break. We'll come back. We've got more to go. Next hour on the program, Scott's agent going to give us the breakdown of what it's like in the NFL now. Negotiating, he's been negotiating contracts across professional sports for 40 years. Tony Agannone joining us next on Unrivaled. Stay right here with us. Before we get out, though, finally, real estate, the way real estate should be with Homie. Full service local agents, you'll save thousands. Homie, a better way to buy or sell. Homie.com. Stay right here with us. It's Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
So I'm the argument that good teams don't lose 6 out of 7, and you're arguing that bad teams don't almost go undefeated in December. And they're both, I think they're both accurate. So I think we are trying to get a gauge on what this Jazz team is.
This is Unrivaled.
GS! GS!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell in front of me as always. Glad to have you on the program. If you miss any portion of the show, you can always download the podcast wherever podcasts are found. You can download the KSL Sports app as well. Stream the show live all day long. You can stream all the shows on the Zone Sports Network on top of being able to find those podcast episodes. So download the KSL Sports app, find that, or you can stream a little bit later, download the podcast. There's just no excuse for you not to be able to hear it. So there you go. We're providing all the different options for you. We're going to start the show off here. This is an interesting one for us because it's as excited
this
as
this is.
Seen,
as I've ne-
this is as excited.
The whole time
I've
we've been
Scott.
Doing this.
Yes.
This is my. I can't wait for this moment.
Let's
I'm
start
so
off.
Excited
here.
About
here we
this.
Go. It's the cut at the top of the hour. A special guest on the program. Here we go.
The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
Joining us on the program, first time guest of the show, and I feel like this is a really fun one. Tony Agannone, who is the agent for Scott Mitchell during his professional career, agent over the last, I guess it's since the late 70s, Tony's been doing this. Tony, thanks for being with us on the program today.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Always a pleasure.
So Scott has the biggest grin on his face right now because he is super pumped about having you on. And I think that the insight that we can get for not just the guy who's been an agent and is an agent for professional athletes and football players specifically, but I want to know what Scott was like as a client right out of the gate. What type of client was Scott?
Scott was the famous pivot. for when he played in the World Football League, and of course he played for the Dolphins, and then of course on to Detroit and everything. He was a great client. He was really down to earth, and a lot of times you can't say that about all the clients I've had over
what?
The years.
What?
There have been some pretty wild ones now, I can tell you. But he was wonderful, and the great part is he does not get enough credit for being as good as he was. In fact, he was one of the first guys to throw for 4,000 yards. And Tom Moore, it's kind of funny, who was his offensive coordinator years later in my life here, he's now the special assistant down with the Buccaneers. And so we talk often about Scott and all the throws and the different things that they've done did over the years and some of the things they did with the Bucs and some of the things that Scott liked to do. The play action, you know, is what Brady's doing. So it was kind of an interesting, kind of a fun time.
So it's Scott, well, Tom, hold on, I'm, was, right, that I'm was writing kind this of, down. Yeah, Scott that, taught Tom Brady all he needs to know. Is that pretty, what I'm getting?
Well, not
that?
Only Tom Brady, but Peyton Manning.
There you go.
Look, Tony, that was painful for me because we did. We went, when I was in Detroit and we had and Tom Moore was our offensive coordinator. They basically said, "What do we have to do with our offense?" And all the players said, "You brought this quarterback here, let him throw the football." And I sat down with Tom, and we had Barry Sanders as a running back, and I sat down with Tom Moore, and we basically – we took We took his knowledge, we took what I knew, and we kind of molded it all together and really pared it down and took the best of the best. And then we just went to town, and I saw a lot of our offense with Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. And I knew Tom Moore was with the Bucks. I didn't know how much of what we had done translated there, but yeah, it was a great time, and he was a great coach. I just wish he hadn't gotten fired.
Well, the funny thing is it translated so much that now Brian Leftwich has got the job in Jacksonville. So he taught him basically all that stuff. And, getting the ball out is what was, Scott was famous for, getting the ball out of his hands and moving right along. So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
So that was something that has really evolved and eventually led them to their Super Bowl championship. So
let's get this straight then.
You can go back, Alex, to Scott. You can give a tribute. Happy victory to Scott. There you go.
Yeah.
So we have Peyton Manning, we have Tom Brady, and now it looks like Trevor Lawrence is well on his way to having an amazing career.
Sure. So here's one of the things, Tony, as an agent too, and you've been doing it for so long. You've been representing guys in the NFL since 1978. What's changed? What's the biggest thing if you were to look at it? I mean, obviously over 38 years of doing this, or 35 years of doing this, what is the thing that you could look at and say that's the thing that's changed the most? And it's for good or for bad. What is it?
Well, I think the thing that's changed the most is that now guys can't tackle, and the defenses are totally neutered. So, Goodell has always wanted to have the Canadian Football League, and he's going to get it. That's what we are. We're 54-48. You saw what happened with Mahomes. You saw what happened with Josh Allen. What we're going to see is that's all we're going to need. You can't, as a corner or safety, we had some unbelievable players. Kevin Ross, who's in the Ring of Fame with the Kansas City Chiefs. People were afraid to play against him because he hits you so hard. We're not going to see that anymore. What we're seeing now is the trend is that they want to see the ball in the air, and they want to see how it goes, and that's really what they want.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how in 13 seconds you can go as far as Kansas City did at the end. I agree with it. Have you ever been able to wrap your head around, like, the money? Because we had a moment when I signed in Detroit, and I remember you saying to me, because it was a big deal, right? I was one of the first free agents. It was big. It's an embarrassing amount of money right now with all the money these players are getting.
Yeah, it's a joke now.
But did you ever imagine that you'd see this kind of money in the NFL?
I did, only in this respect. Always. The television networks were always craving for more. And the year that Fox TV really was formed around the NFL, when I realized that a whole network could come out of the NFL, I realized at that point that the amount of money would only continue to go up. And, Amazon just bought the Thursday night package for $1 billion. I mean, you tease me about wrapping my head around. I have an extremely hard time with that because it's a Thursday night package. But that's something, streaming, all these new things that I've seen over my lifetime is what's really changing the whole NFL. And frankly, the owners, at one time when Scott first started, it was family ownership. It was, or a guy really who was a sportsman who liked it. Today, this is all about corporations. It's corporate money. It's corporate greed. We have all the same issues that every other, institution in the United States has. So that part has changed, and that's been the toughest reflection for me in the last 40 years.
Is my pension going to go up? That's really
that's
what
all I want to know.
Well, to be honest with you, it should have gone up. But when the modern day player went to the table, that was one of the areas that they thought, but not much. And so that's one of the areas that we should have way better pension benefits, but we didn't we didn't really do what we had to do. You know, it should have been raised up another 33%, and we didn't do it.
What was
that's because the modern player is, you know, looking at their salaries rather than looking at, you know, what's down the road.
Well, let me, how is like the rules that have changed in college in terms of when you're able to get a hold of guys and when you, when your agency's able to reach out to these guys, has it been a benefit that you're able to, you know, not to have to go through so much red tape to be able to, you know, get with these players? Has it been a benefit for the players that are coming out of college now, the way that NIL is set up versus allowing them to get into the draft and maybe not get drafted and then go back to high school or back to college or whatever it is? Do you look at the changes as being a benefit for these players coming out of college?
I really don't. I really don't, because we've not done it correctly. Instead of using the model legislation for NIL, the NIL is a good thing. Players should be allowed to profit. You know, I mean, how many shirts did Scott sell at Utah back in the day? I mean, you know, he should have been able to profit on some of that.
Can we go back in retro and maybe
retroactively get that, some of that back?
Unfortunately, my brother, they can't do that. But it's a good idea. But what happened was that, you know, it's a good situation. But unfortunately, what has happened is NIL has become an excuse for just being above the table as opposed to the schools that were paying guys under the table. And we haven't really improved on that. And that's something that we're going to have a problem with. And it's going to continue to be that. You saw where Ohio State yesterday decided that they're going to take it over, the NIL. And so instead of having booster organizations putting it together, they've decided that they're going to do it in-house. And each team is going to have somebody, an advisor for NIL. And to me, you know, that's probably the next trend I see happening. And if you're a big school and you can afford it, then you'll pay it. And it to me, it's another step towards playing for pay rather than college. It's just, you know, it's playing for play. And if that's what we're going to do, then okay, fine. I'm okay with that. But then let's spell it out.
So you also...
No, it hasn't. It hasn't helped me at all because, you know, we used to wait to contact the players and that, you know, today you can talk to, you know, a kid coming out of high school. And believe me, wow, I have parents that call me from kids coming out of high school.
That's interesting.
Very interesting. So you also represent coaches. And that's always a hot topic in the NFL. There's 8 or 9 openings right now. How does that process work for you? Like, do you actively go out and if you represent someone, do you contact teams? Do they get a hold of you? And kind of walk us through kind of what happens trying to get a guy on with a new team.
Well, it's interesting, Scott, that you bring that up. You know, we have Todd Bowles, who tomorrow we'll interview with the Las Vegas Raiders. So, you know, we've gone through this period of time before. He was a head coach for the New York Jets, probably a poor choice by his agent, but it was one of those things. And, you know, he'll interview, and he's interviewed now for the Vikings. He's interviewed now with the Bears and Jacksonville. What they're looking for today, first, the general managers that they're hiring are more analytics guys. So they're your Harvard-educated, Princeton-educated guys, and they talk about analytics. They talk about all, you know, the different parts of the game. So you have to find a match between the general manager or who's going to be the general manager and the coach, because without that, it just fails.
Hmm.
We've already gone through one arranged marriage, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So you have to have somebody that you're comfortable with and they're comfortable with you, and understand you're all on the same page trying to toe the mark together. And unfortunately, that's not something that really, you know, goes into play a lot. So that's what you have to look for. That's what we do look for. Believe it or not, you do turn down some interviews because it's worthless. You're not going to match up with that GM, or you're not going to match up with that organization. So it's been interesting. Now, having represented a number of minority coaches that are, you know, that were defensive coordinators or offensive coordinators and that kind of thing, it's extremely difficult that the owners really don't know the people that work in their buildings. They may know one or two of them, but they really don't know them all.
That's
so
fascinating.
As a coach develops, where does he really develop? Where do they see? They see it on TV, and they see the offensive guys. And if you notice, you see many young offensive coaches now, because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for that, you know, light up the scoreboard. So it's a little different. It's been very interesting for me, and that's really more of what I'm doing today now than even the players. So it's kind of an interesting situation.
Tony Agannone, he's out of the Eastern. What's the name of the agency? It's EAS, but
Eastern Athletic, Athletic Services.
Okay, so Eastern Athletic Services. You guys have repped, multiple Pro Bowlers, tons of guys over the years, and stuff has changed, and you guys have to change with it. And you've kept that client list massive for you guys. And have you noticed too? Has it been? I mean, what has the NFL become in terms of the business side of things? Everybody always goes, well, those players need to know it's a business. When guys come in, what's the coaching you give them right off the bat if they're sitting down with you for the first time? Like when Scott sat down with you for the first time, has your pitch changed a lot from when you sat down and talked with Scott in 1989 versus now in 2022 when you sit down with guys?
No, we always feel that it's the beginning of the career to the end of the career and then after career. And we have to understand what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it. It's not changed in that respect. It's still, you know, a lot of these guys feel it's a transaction. I've always felt it's an avocation. It's a longer period of time. You're going to spend time with these guys. You're going to keep up with them. You're going to try to help them if they come to you. So it really hasn't changed that much. It's more, a lot of guys like the transaction thing. They're very much into that. Hey, you know, here you do my deal and see you. We don't talk. I've never thought that was very, you know, apropos. So I don't believe in that. And so I try to do it the other way. That doesn't mean that that's not part of it, but I value the relationships I have with these guys. You know, the Michael Strahans of the world. I talked to him the other day about a project he's doing, and, you know, we still talk about that kind of stuff. And you know, the Rosses and the Bowles was a client of mine first before he became a coach, and then we just continued on.
Right.
So, you know, those kind of things I really appreciate, and I appreciate all the people that I've dealt with over the years.
Do you remember when you first met me? I was thinking that right before we got on the phone, and it just dawned on me our first meeting. Do you even recall that? Hate to put you on the spot. I know you're getting old.
Well, you're right about that. There's some question in my memory bank, I can tell you that. But I remember meeting you out in Utah. I do remember that. And I remember meeting with your dad. So, yeah. I mean, that part I do remember. I remember having a conversation with you about it, and I remember that you were struggling whether you should go back to school or whether you should come out.
Yeah.
And talked about that part and what goes on and the whole bit.
I was thinking about, of all the, you know, Scott's one of those guys that was on multiple teams, and I'm sure you've represented guys who've been on a ton of teams. And sometimes, you know, they show up for a short period of time before they're even gone. But when you're going through those deals and you have multiple plates in the air and multiple clients that you're trying to do the right thing for, what is the thing that you try to look at most when you sit down with a client and you sit down with a GM? Like the hardball part, I think, that we all see on TV, how much of that is actually true, and how much do these guys want to get deals done? How brutal does it get when you're negotiating?
Well, it's like everything else. Sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's tough. It's like with any boss. I mean, some bosses are are tough to deal with overall. Some people are like, hey, you know, if we're fair and we can get it resolved, we can do it quickly. So it really depends on the team. It really depends on the player. You know, I mean, I think for a long time in New York, even though they just retired his jersey, I think that they weren't all that excited about Michael because he negotiated the way he played. If he could sack you, he would. So, I mean, it all depends on how the player is and what the player does, period. So it all, you know, there's no formula, there's no area, there's no, you know, no thing I can say, yeah, that's, you know, this is what we always do and that kind of thing. So that's the best answer I can give you. It really depends on the club and depends on the person.
Yeah.
I've had some knockdown dragouts, but I've had some very pleasant and easy ones as well.
You were great as an agent, and you gave me great advice, and you really guided me along the way. And in fact, the only time we disagreed was whether I should stay with the Cincinnati Bengals or go to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I won out on that, and actually that was a bad choice, but you're just
you guys sound like an old married couple. You're like, honey, you were right about that. I should have listened to you all those years back then.
Well, you know, it's like everything else in life. You disagree, but you agree in the end, and you decide what's best. And sometimes it turns out great, and sometimes it turns out not as great. And that's just part of it. It's, you know, part and parcel of what we do. And believe me, I've had a lot of guys decide, you know, and I've told them advice, and they've said, nah, I'm going to do it this way. And it worked out great. So, you know, you never know. You do the best you can with the information you have at the time.
That's a good agent right there. One will admit that he was wrong, maybe, you know, in those senses. That's the best advertisement you could do. Tony Agannone, it's Eastern Athletic Services is his firm, and we so appreciate you representing Scott for all those years and a long list of clients and still doing it all those years later. So we appreciate you joining us on the program. It's been really fun to reminisce.
Well, thank you. My pleasure. And, you know, probably one of the nicest times I had out there was when Scott went into the Utah Hall of Fame. They're very impressive. And it's funny, I met the coach at Penn State, the wrestling coach, and out there when he got in as well. And I laughed because
Kale Sanderson,
I think
they're probably
the number one wrestling place in the country.
Yeah.
So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was. Well, we appreciate it. Tony Agannone, thanks for being with us and being on the program. Scott was so tickled that we could get you on.
My
so
pleasure.
We're really excited about it. Thanks again. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. More to go here on Unrivaled. Got a ton to get through still. We've got some topics to jump into. When we return, I've got to get into this Urban Meyer talk, because Urban Meyer started to open up about that job at the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll talk about that. Scott has thoughts on it. You've worked your tail off in this to get that retirement. You should be having fun with your family, not work and worry all the time. That's why you got to go to retireteton.com/radio. Get a complimentary retirement ascent plan from Teton Wealth Group. That's retireteton.com/radio. We'll come back. When we return, we got that Urban Meyer discussion right around the corner. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It's Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell just tickled pink with his agent on the line. You've always been very, very – I think the majority of the time that I hear guys talk about their agent, it's not like he's my agent. It's like I had the worst agent. My agent screwed me over. You know, and that's never been the case for you.
No, there's really famous agents.
Yes.
Okay, like well-known. And I spoke with several of them when I was interviewing agents. And a lot of people with Tony actually get him the second time around, because they go, you don't lose guys, and you always get good deals for your guys. And they go, I want that, because they did. They most of them got taken by an agent, and then they go to him. And that's what I really enjoyed about Tony. In fact, I was at Utah, and Utah never had players drafted back then. So I was like, who's a good agent? And you know where I found out who good agents were? I called BYU.
Oh, you did?
Because, well, they were the ones
they're
having
the ones
players.
Who had quarterbacks going out, yeah.
And they said, there's this guy in Baltimore named Tony Agnone, and he's represented a lot of our players. In fact, he got into business through Bart Oates. Tony was actually a law professor. And it was. What he said is, I want to make sure I take care of these guys in their career and after their career. And it's not just, you know, it's not just a one hit, boom, and it's over. It's really a relationship. And he's a good friend. Still chat with him, and you know, it's just...
It was pretty cool to talk to him.
Yeah.
That's fun to hear.
It was amazing. Quite frankly, it wasn't enough time.
Sounds like you got... It sounds like... I mean, you could have been...
Like really, we need about 2 hours, because he's full of just great information.
He could have some wild stories, too.
He's like...
He doesn't like the way the NFL's going.
No.
Oh, no, you can tell the majority of his clients now are defenders.
Oh, yeah. He's always had defenders.
He's got a
lot. Well, Michael Strahan was one of
them. Right. Yeah, defenders aren't allowed to hit anybody. That's never something that comes out of Scott's mouth. It's
I agree with that. Look, I agree with him. The NFL's different. I'm not saying I like it or dislike it. There's no question. It's an advantageous league for offenses. Without a doubt.
Well, and I think he nailed it, too, when he goes, look, what you saw this weekend with...
Is a precursor to...
Right. Well, not just that. How did we react when we had that game? Everyone said that's the most amazing thing ever.
Yeah.
That stuff gets borne out, and you bear that out in the ratings, you know, on TV. And everybody goes, well, how can we have more of that? Well, you've got to get the ball in guys' hands. And the way you do that is you punish defenders throughout the year to give a massive cushion to these guys, not get there early, not hit guys as hard. I'm all about the safety part of it. I'm all about making sure that these players aren't going head-to-head. And you know, this generation of players are still going to have massive effects of CTE, guaranteed, despite all the changes that have been made. But you're also going to get – massive offensive numbers, like you were saying. All right. Scott, Urban Meyer has opened up about that NFL gig that he had at the Jacksonville Jaguars for 13 weeks. What were they, 1-11 when he ended up leaving? Either way,
I think
good.
Of all of the sports things that happened this year, like everything across the board, the fact that Urban Meyer could not make it through a year, season.
Is that the most shocking thing?
Most shocking thing to me. Positive or negative, most shocking thing in sports that's happened to me this year.
Well, he comes out
not this 2022, because we just started this. But
He was asked about, like, what's the difference in the NFL? What's the difference with college? And basically people want to know, how is it that you weren't successful in the NFL and you weren't in college? And he said... Well, you know the amount of reps you get in practice before you go and play in a game. To me, it was shocking. It was shockingly low. For example, quote, we would practice, you know, maybe one or two reps at something. Then, you know, then you're calling it in the game. In college, you never do that. In college, you're going to get at least a dozen opportunities to practice that play before you go out. And so there's a lot of differences. Quote, in professional football, there's no recruiting. So it's all scheme, all roster management. You're going to go. You're getting guys rolling in on your organization on a Tuesday, and they're going to play for you on a Sunday.
All right.
So that's an advantage, by the way. If you're like, you don't have to worry about recruiting.
No.
Be amazing.
No. You're missing the whole point.
What is it?
It just went by you.
What?
It went over you. Urban Meyer, in what you've just read to me, has exposed what he is as a football coach.
Which is
And what I think a lot of football coaches are in these big time programs. We're going to out athlete you. That's what we're going to do. And so what you think of all these quarterbacks from Ohio State, and they get to the pros and they struggle. And they struggle because they really haven't been coached up. They've been athleted up. They just go around, run around, make plays, and they're just better. They're just better than all the people around them.
Every team in the NFL is athleted up.
Right. And so guess what? You know what that means? You have to coach people. The fact that it's like he goes, well, there's no recruiting. I can't go out and get the best players in the country. It's like I'm at Ohio State. I'm going to go get the very best players, and we're just going to beat you because we're better.
Because we're
faster.
You got guys rolling in on a Tuesday, and suddenly they have to play for you on a Sunday.
That's hogwash. It's really hogwash right there, okay? Because, look,
Hogwash. Okay. You and my dad should hang out.
What exactly is hogwash?
I don't know, but it's a term that's like that my dad totally used.
Yeah, we need to figure out what that is.
I mean, you could.
I've said it my whole life. I don't even know what it means.
It's gross. It's disgusting.
Yeah,
and it's.
Here's the thing. Okay, we had this discussion with Tony, my agent, right? And he mentioned Tom Moore. Tom Moore is the offensive coordinator for Detroit when right. I was there. He was with Peyton Manning, and he's been with Bruce Arians. So he was out in Arizona and he's of course there in Tampa Bay. We had plenty of time to rep all of this stuff.
What he's saying is not true then.
Well, no, good teams figure out a way to get the reps in. You don't necessarily have to go full speed practice, rep everything out. But so we would have a walkthrough. We'd go in a meeting. We'd have a walkthrough. We'd go and we'd have practice. We'd have another walkthrough. We'd go watch the film, and we'd do it again the next day. The next day, we'd do it Tuesday or Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 4 days. And you know what? If you weren't comfortable with something, you go, we never ran it in a game. Now an offensive genius, Brian Billick, who won all these Super Bowls, who I played for, was like Urban Meyer. Like, you'd run a play a couple of times, and then that's it. You'd never run it again. And so in some regards,
he's
making
it sound like he didn't have very much control either. Like, they do all this stuff this way, and I was just caught up in the mess of it. And it's like
what the challenge of it is, you have your roster. That's it, right? So you got to coach up your roster. You got to figure out how to get mismatches. And when you have a young quarterback, he's not going to know how to do that. Like, I'll give you an example. When Tampa Bay was playing in the game, right? They couldn't block anyone, so they had to use an extra back and Gronkowski, because whenever they released Gronkowski, Tom Brady got sacked. So they just said, our outside receivers, one of those two guys is going to be in one-on-one coverage. And whoever's got one-on-one coverage, that's who we're going to throw the ball to. Right? And so and they just said that we're going to find the one-on-one coverage, the mismatch, and we're going to go to that. And that's about as simple as it gets. And that's how it is all the time. And Tom Brady's done that in his whole career. Really good quarterbacks understand where the one-on-one matchup is, where I have and you can plan that. You can scheme that. And it's not that complicated. And Urban Meyer's just used to, you know, had he had more time in the NFL, maybe he just had better athletes. And what's interesting to me is it brings me back. I had a conversation with Urban Meyer when he first got hired at Utah. And I sat in his office and we talked. We actually went to lunch. And I said, you know, in my career, I have like a lot of really good knowledge about offensive football. Would you like me to share some of it with you? I'd be more than happy to sit down and we just talk, you know? And he says, no, I'm good. I know what I got. I don't need him.
Wow.
I'm like, I mean, it's like free information. And he's like, no, we're okay. And I'm like, okay. Nowhere. It wasn't like it was just. I was still playing in the NFL.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't like it was. You know. He's like, well, I don't know. It just really.
He's where the highway. Yeah,
that's kind
and,
of what it is.
He got the ladder.
He got the highway.
This time he got the ladder. I just thought it was interesting that idea of, well, you know why I didn't go well in the league?
It's going to be fascinating watching.
I couldn't
Brian
control it more.
Right. Yeah. It really is. Brian Leftwich. Going to Jacksonville, who he actually played for the Jets, you know, that's gonna be an interesting, that'll be kind of fun to watch to see what he can do with Byron Leftwich Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence, yeah.
Because you know what he'll do? He'll go. Let's show you about Tom Brady.
Let's open up the playbook. Well, let's make your life easy.
That they will if they make it easy for him. That could be a good situation.
All right, let's take the break here. We'll come back.
He may go past Zach Wilson.
Uh-oh.
But that's what Zach Wilson needs. He needs someone like that. I'm just telling you.
The Big Ten looking to ditch their division talk and go straight to an 8-game league slate with all 14 teams staring at each other and figuring out how to schedule that thing. Good for alliances. We'll have to see how this works. How are the conferences going to move forward in scheduling? Is everybody else going to go to this 8-game schedule? It looks like it in the conferences. It looks like it. We'll come back. More to go.
With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Okay, welcome back. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. It's unrivaled. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. We've had a fun time this show, Scott. We have fun most shows. This has been particularly fun. So, hey, I was going to bring something up with you. I think I was like a lot of people. I couldn't stand Kobe Bryant, you know, as a player. Mostly because he was so good.
Didn't part of it, though, feel like maybe he wasn't as good as he thought he was? It was kind of a little...
There was a part to it. Anytime that somebody's... Didn't it kind of feel like... There was a good chunk of his career where all we wanted to talk about was, yeah, but how does he compare to Michael Jordan? It's a lot of what LeBron has gone through, right?
Yeah. But Kobe tried to look like he tried to imitate... Like
he kind of did.
He was kind of the karaoke version of Michael Jordan, right?
But he was so freaking good. The reality was is we didn't like him because he beat the Jazz.
Yeah.
That's why people didn't like
him. He actually was pretty good.
Way good.
Yeah.
I seen all this stuff today on the second anniversary of his of that helicopter crash that claimed the lives of I think it was 11 people total. It was 9. I thought it was 9 plus Kobe and his daughter, but Kobe and his daughter, as you've seen the videos, it makes me supremely sad.
Yeah.
And
that was right out where I filmed The Biggest Loser, like was, within blocks of where
it was
we were.
One of those play. Yeah. It was one of those times that I can actually, and I always, it's one of those moments. We have handfuls of them, right? But not a ton. I remember exactly where I was when I got the news of Kobe's death. That's how impactful. Because on the one hand, he was doing all this awesome stuff too. That like the hatred for the Kobe the player. Wore off. It had already gotten to the point where it was like he was hanging out with his daughters and just living the dream and being
won an Oscar.
Super, I mean, like doing all the projects he wanted. You realize how smart he was, how amazing he was at stuff. And you know, I've just been to see what his wife Vanessa is going through. Still, she's in court over a lot of these battles that she's having with the sheriff's department, with the operators of the helicopter company. The families of the helicopter pilots, and I just hope that she finds some peace, because it would be awful, and I don't know if it's possible. Well, I don't know if it's not a getting
and
over
and
thing.
Go,
I just want
well,
there to be
you
a
go
moment.
Through a lot of emotions in the grieving process, and it's just different for everyone, and it's
she
challenging.
Has,
and
she has gone through something that you know.
What's hard for me with stuff like that is you feel like. There was just so much more that could have been done, like with their life. You know, I think of some of these artists who, and some of these athletes who've died way too young, or really anyone who's died, they just, you know, and you hear parents that go, you know, I'm never going to see my kid go to prom. I'm never going to see my, I'm not going to have grandkids. I'm not going to, you know, and that's the hard part is missing out on those wonderful experiences of life when you lose someone way too young. I mean, that's really the challenge of it, you know, and the disappointment. I always feel bad about those situations. The thing for me as I get older, like, and recently I've had some people very close to me, family members and good friends who have passed away, like this last year, year and a half. And you get older and death becomes more, I guess, of a reality, and it's not so frightening to me. I don't know. I just don't feel like it's the end.
And I think, you know, even with that, still, even with the thought of something better, just the horrific nature of what that crash is.
I think food would be better when you die.
You know, you remember that movie, Defending Your Life?
No, I don't.
Albert Brooks, and actually, it's a great movie. You'd love it. You don't never watch it? See, you need your NFL career robbed you of sitting around watching movies, man. You need to sit around and watch this movie, Defending Your Life. There's a scene where obviously it's Albert Brooks is
I'll watch it.
Albert Brooks has passed away, and it's great perspective. And the idea is you got to go in front of this movie screen of your life and defend your actions, you know, and it's basically a tribunal. You know, it's kind of interesting. But one of the things is he goes to this diner. And he's just talking with, you know, this other character. And they're like, what do you have? And he's like, oh, I don't know. I'll get the omelet and the pancakes. She's like, oh, you'll love them. And he eats it. And he's talking. He's mid-conversation. He takes a bite of his omelet. And he goes, oh, my gosh. This is amazing. This is the best food I've ever had. And they're like, every day. Every day. This is what it's going to be. The bacon was amazing. You know, the omelet was amazing.
So the food is better.
Well, I mean, according to Albert Brooks. I just am so the two-year anniversary of Kobe, I can't believe it was 2 years. I honestly thought it was last year. So when somebody told me it was two, I went, yeah. I remember exactly where I was on that Sunday. Remember exactly where I was. And I really just hope at this point Vanessa Bryant and their family just can find some peace. Taking the break. We'll come back. Sorry to be a downer, but we got next hour. We got David Locke going to come back. He's going to give us a burst of energy, hopefully. Jazz, Suns. Going on tonight here at Vivint Smart Home Arena. You don't want to miss if this Jazz team, even without Donovan Mitchell, even without Rudy Gobert, here at home, if they can get it done against the Suns, we'll have the voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke, join us in just a few moments. Stay with us. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Unrivaled, 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, thanks for hanging out with us. Tomorrow, one of Scott's former teammates, Herman Moore, is going to join the program. That's a guy who's on the cusp. Like, he's in the argument for being in the Hall of Fame. I want to see, you know, he's 10,000 yards receiving in his career, tons of yards, tons of touchdowns. You threw a lot of those touchdowns to him. So Herman Moore is going to join the program tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be a fun conversation.
So you don't want to miss that one. Joining us right now on the program, he is the voice of the Utah Jazz, presented by the Murdoch Auto Team. He is David Locke. Thanks for being on the program, David. Thanks for hanging out with us. It's game day, baby. Let's go.
When you ask Herman Moore, he's the only great Lion that actually finished their complete career, right?
I think
like if Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson both retired, like, okay, I've had enough of this being a Lion, I'm out.
Right.
Locke, you got to realize, if you ever played for the Lions, you could kind of understand why they probably want to leave a little bit
early. Yeah. My heavens. Jeez.
I was a little nervous there. I don't know your end feeling about the Lions. So I was a little nervous making that joke. But
the end feeling, I have it every time I go to the bathroom. That's kind of how I'm feeling with it.
No. So now you know where you're at.
Actually,
be in the Hall of Fame for just endurance.
Exactly.
It's an interesting. This is the time of year we argue about the Baseball Hall of Fame, the Football Hall of Fame, all of those things kind of come together at this time.
We were talking about the Bengals and them actually winning, you know, on the road. And I said, this is just a sad deal for the Detroit Lions because, I mean, if the Bengals can win playoff games, it just who are the Detroit Lions? They can't win a playoff game.
Yeah. Who are the Detroit Lions of the NBA, David? Like, if you look at it, who is it?
Unquestionably the Sacramento Kings.
Oh, yeah.
They were down 60 last night.
Embarrassing.
I mean, the crazy thing about the Kings also – I mean, they did have that great run, but I guess there's probably been some, you know, Alex Karras had a good run with the Lions, too. But they did have that Weber, Bibby, Christie team that was so good, but they haven't made the playoffs since. And the crazy thing about them, particularly, is, they thought they were good this year.
And they showed flashes in the beginning, right? We were kind of convinced, hey, this young team's got a lot of talent on it. For 5 minutes, we were convinced they might have been right.
I mean, there's a phenomenon in the NBA. A friend of mine, Matt Moore, who hosts Locked On Nuggets and does Action Network work, I'm stealing his phrase. It's a great – teams are most dangerous before they look in the mirror. And, you know, those early season games against the Kings, those three early season games, the Kings, you kind of knew were going to be tough because they hadn't looked in the mirror yet to realize, oh, actually, we're not good. Like, they've clearly looked in the mirror now and are into the dog days and tired and down 60. Though this year is really, honestly, someone took an atomic bomb. Well, not someone. COVID took an atomic bomb, dropped it on the NBA season, and this thing is now just all out of whack. And I don't know when it comes back and when you start to figure out what's real and what's not. But even, you know, last night was just the weirdest night I've probably ever viewed in the NBA. I mean, the Kings were down 60. The Clippers had the second largest comeback in the history of the NBA. And one of the guys on the floor was Amir Coffey. Like, nothing that's going on right now makes sense. I think San Antonio was up 30 last night.
Right.
There, you know, the Lakers beat Brooklyn, and everyone wants to pronounce the Lakers back, right? But Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving didn't play. So, like, right. So it's just a very. This is not probably as uncommon as we're going to make it sound. But I think it's not uncommon to have games 30 through 60 being kind of funky in this league, maybe 40 through 65. And then you add the COVID aspect of things, and it's just outrageous. And sorry, I don't want to monologue here too much, but part of it is that even when you're out of the COVID, so like your team gets hit with health and safety protocols, and you're suddenly losing 5 and 6 players at a time, or 4 and 5, and then you come out of it and you're like, oh, you got your roster back. Except for all the guys that didn't get COVID are exhausted because they were carrying the load more than they're used to. And all the guys that are coming off COVID, I'm utterly convinced. I don't have any data to prove it. I can't find anyone who's trying to prove it. Guys are not coming back right. They're not exactly right when they come back.
Well, they wouldn't
and now,
be, right? Yeah.
That can either be you just were off for 5 days and so you're not right, or it could be something COVID related. I have no idea. I mean, who knows? But, you know, hopefully, you know, Rudy gets hurt five games after coming back from COVID. Related or not, I don't know, but it seems weird.
Yeah, I got COVID. I got it twice, and the comeback is hard. I mean, I could see that. It's interesting to see kind of both ends of it. So the Jazz are shorthanded tonight against the Suns, and I mean, what, you know, with as crazy as things are and how you're describing this, I mean, what can Jazz fans expect from this game?
I think it's fun, and maybe I'm making this up, but Eddie House and Trent Forrest and Eric Paschal and Jared Butler made Chris Paul play 40 minutes and put on a Hall of Fame dominating fourth quarter to beat him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Royce O'Neal, Joe Ingles, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Mike Conley, and I'm back in the lineup tonight. I don't think I can get my ass kicked by 20.
Why not, right? That's awesome.
Push him just as hard as Trent Forrest, Eddie. Like, I don't want to make it sound like there's division inside the team, but, like, really, like, if you come out tonight and get run by 20, you don't really have the, like, no Donovan, no Rudy excuse when those guys, now Phoenix might have, you know, there's an opponent involved here. It's not a one, you know, zero-sum game. So, but, you know, you understand the concept of why I find tonight super interesting, because I do feel some guns drop the gauntlet a little bit of, like, you know what, we played our butt off, and we push the best team in the NBA to the wire. What do you got?
David, one of the things anytime I find myself almost accidentally on the team advanced stats on NBA.com, I've gotten down a weird road. The Jazz are they're still far up in all of these, in so many of these categories. Offensive rating still number one in the league. Effective field goal percentage still number one. They're in that one or two spot. They're nowhere to be seen, obviously, on like the defensive rating side of things. But I guess what are we supposed to know about when things do quote unquote get to normal? What's the thought of how much or how long term do you have to wait until a team does get quote unquote right?
I don't know, Greg. It's the mystery question. You know, it's probably you're revving it up to, you'd like to be right by game 70 and 75 and playing really well, and half of your opponents you play at that point probably aren't playing very hard, and the other half of your opponents are giving every ounce of everything they have because they're battling for positioning. And with the rule changes the NBA made with the play-in game, there's more teams playing for positioning, so those games are way better late in the season than they've ever been. And I apologize, I have not looked at the back end of our schedule to see who we play in the final 10 or 15 games. I do know our schedule was super soft to start the year, so I expect we're playing playoff teams late. So maybe we're really waiting all the way till April to really try to get everything ramped back up. I do think there's great value to the next, you know, Rudy's got a mild calf sprain, so I don't know how long it's going to be. Is it, you know, is he going on his next road trip? Is he, I'd suspect we don't see him for a week or two. Like, I don't have any knowledge of that, but I'm just kind of, frankly, I Google searched one too many times to try to figure out how long calf sprains are. So that's really my knowledge
WebMD.
Right. Yeah, like, I mean, I think there's a few jazz legends who proven us that maybe searching the internet too much is not always that productive. But I think that, so maybe I should get off, but, you know.
No, stay on.
He doesn't play the next four or five games. I think that's really good for us because the number one thing that this team has to learn how to do is defend without Rudy. And that's going to be the key to the whole playoff run is, even when Rudy's on the floor, teams are going to try to minimize his defensive role because he's the greatest defensive player in the world. So how can we get better in the next five or six games to be able to figure out, you know, how are we going to do this? Like, and I think the guys deserve a little bit of a pass on how brutally bad they were on the first stint without Rudy, because frankly, the entire team is built around Rudy's defense. Like, that's how we're built. And then Rudy gets COVID, which nobody knew was happening, right? And so for one night, it was okay in Denver. And then everybody else was scouting and knew you were going to have Rudy, and we didn't have any practice time. Well, now, like, okay, there's a little, like, you're ready. Like, you now got, you know it's coming. We got four or five games against the best in the NBA without Rudy, and let's see if we can get better defensively. Do we win any of those games? I kind of doubt it. I don't really care. I want to see if we get better defensively.
So going back to your comment about the reserves throwing down the gauntlet, does any of that translate further into the season? And are any of these guys, by getting quality minutes, are they developed enough? Did they show enough that potentially they could help the team down the road?
So I'm a really big believer that the 240 minutes a night of the regular season, so that's 48 times 5, mm-hmm. right? That's 240 active minutes a night, are super different than the 240 minutes of playoff minutes. So when you say down the road, can I stop at about April 14th and say, yes, I do think that Trent Forrest and Eric Paschal have shown that they are viable options for the 240 regular season minutes during, and maybe even Jared Butler can give you some offense. His defense still needs work. He needs work, right? He's just really young. He's showing all the little signs that he can do some things really well. So that they can maybe be a part of Paschal and Forrest, no question, can be part of the 240 minutes during the regular season. Paschal, I'm more willing to believe, could probably be part of the 240 playoff minutes if necessary. Trent's lack of shooting when the game is scouted to the level the playoffs are scouting, any type of weakness just gets exploited. And so I'm a little reluctant there.
Chris Paul's leading the league in both assists and steals, and he's like,
I thought you were gonna say swing through fouls. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, whatever. Hate those.
Listen, this is a guy who, and by the way, they were showing kind of the list of guys who've done that, and John Stockton's on that list a couple of times. And while he was in his, you know, mid to late 20s, I think 29 was the oldest that he did it. And he's the oldest on the list besides Chris Paul, who's 36 and a half doing it. How impressive has Chris Paul's ability to be able to still make such an impact on a team been for this Suns team who's coming into town tonight?
It's mind-blowing. And I think it's even – I'm going to throw another hypothesis at you. I'm not sure there's ever been a player post 35 who's changed his legacy ever in the league. So there have been players post 35 who've added to their legacy. Like, LeBron's adding to his legacy right now, right? Like, he was the greatest player ever, and he's just eliminating any discussion about it. Now he's just doing stuff no one's ever done at this age before. So, but he's not changing his legacy. Chris Paul, when he went to Phoenix, was known as a great point guard, probably a Hall of Famer, but never gotten out of the second round of the playoffs, had massive playoff failures, had terrible team chemistry issues on every team he was on, had suddenly been a one year and out at every place he'd been. Like, he was teetering, like, with a, like a, can you have a questionable Hall of Fame career? Like, that's what I would have called that, right? You're the, yeah, he's a Hall of Fame, one of the great point guards of all time, but there would have been a huge capital bold-faced 32 font, but on the back of his career.
Right.
And he went and took the erase button to that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
to me,
phenomenal.
That's what's truly, he, Phoenix without Chris Paul is the Detroit Lions.
Hey, all right.
Seriously, like where we started the conversation today, if you had asked me that question before Chris Paul went and like Robert Sarver's got leaving goats in the lot in the office of GMs, and now you have all the sexual harassment and racism stuff, and like you would literally say that the Suns were that, but Chris Paul, Monty Williams probably deserves some credit too, but Chris Paul literally arrived in Phoenix. Devin Booker went from an inefficient, empty number, questionable star to a bona fide all-star, maybe MVP candidate, like, because of Chris Paul.
Yeah. Chris Paul changed the culture, no question.
Scott mentioned that yesterday. Yeah. He was like, look, Tom Brady, he shows up places, he changes the entire organization, and that's what Chris Paul's done.
Right. Truly, like, and then the fact that, like, so let's remember that Chris Paul was drafted the same year as Darren Williams, and Darren Williams is now a boxer.
Wow.
And Raymond Felton, I decided the other day, I don't know if this is true or not, I had fun with this the other day, this is just totally made up, this is, but Raymond Felton is like on a beach somewhere wearing one of those like really big Hawaiian shirts because like he can't go shirtless right now.
You've just described the majority of my adulthood, so that's good.
Right, like Felton couldn't really go shirtless as a player. Like he was wearing the T-shirt under the tank top, so you didn't see all the rolls by the end of his career. So I'm guessing he's wearing Bermuda shorts on a beach, having Mai Tais, wearing one of those big Hawaiian shirts, and every button might not close. Right.
It's called the Tommy Bahama, and it's comfortable, Dave. Come on.
I got one quick question for you before we go.
Is boxing and hanging out with Brooke Henderson at celebrity golf events, and Chris Paul kicking our ass in the fourth quarter.
All right, so let me go with a football analogy here really quick. Jimmy Garoppolo, early on in the season for the 49ers, he's looking over his shoulder because, of course, they draft a guy, And it's kind of impacting his play. He just kind of forgot all about it and just went out and played. And, of course, he's got him in the conference championship game. Do you sense from any of the players with the Jazz, with the trade deadline looming, are any of these guys playing kind of looking over their shoulder like I might be gone and, I want to be here. I don't want to screw up. Do you get a sense from that at all from any of these players or not?
I don't even know what to think. Can I change your question a little bit and maybe you can give me the insight? Like, part of me on that question feels like if you can't handle the trade deadline, buck up. And then on the other side, he's like, you're human. You got a wife. You got a few kids. Or you got friends. And you're, like, literally could get a phone call and they could tell you you have to go to Detroit. Like, and so I never know how – what's a fair analysis from a media perspective on this question? Because honestly, I'm on both sides of the, like if Danny Ainge becoming a GM has made someone pucker up, like, oh my goodness, you've got to be better than that.
Yeah. Grow up a little bit. Yeah. You're a pro.
Right. Right. On the other end, like I've been in the final year of a contract and it ain't great. Right. Like I've dealt with it. Like where you're really psychoanalyzing every movement. Oh my gosh, that guy didn't say hi to me today. I don't think they're going to renew my contract. I've been there. I've done it.
Yeah, I think these guys are human, right? And I think some guys handle it well, and some guys can kind of push it aside, and some guys maybe not. Because I kind of wonder. A couple of years ago with Ricky Rubio, it just felt like it kind of had an impact on him. and word got out that they were trying to trade for Mike Connolly, and he just kept talking about how much he loved playing here, wanted to play here, and it just felt to me like, you know, maybe at times it might have gotten to him. I have to believe that these guys, they are human, and as much as they want to be professional and want to not think about it, it's got to play into things at times.
Well, and I think that in the case of Ricky, it's a great. It really bothered him. I was with him. I talked to him about it. Yes, but it hurt him as much that he felt it was the organization didn't understand his value, right? So that's where he was hurt. Like, he felt a lack that the front office, by talking about trading for Mike Connolly, didn't understand, like, the things he did for the franchise. So that was – he was very hurt by that.
Yeah, it sucks when someone doesn't believe in you. It does.
Right.
No
right.
fun.
And or at least if you interpret them as not believing
sure.
in you, right?
Yep.
I think the other one that plays into this is guys like Jordan and Joe that are, you know, scuffling a little bit right now. And then they're already pressing, and then that plays into it even more, right? So – you know, Jordan, I'm not totally convinced that Jordan's actually scuffling. I think he got a hot streak for 5 months, 4 months last year, and then team scouted him, and this is kind of who he is now, because
right.
I think he's on the top front page of the scouting report right now. But Joe's, you know, 10 points off his 3-point shooting of a year ago, which was a bit unnatural, but he's 4 or 5 percentage points off his numbers from last year, and he's third, you know, so he's wondering, like, because Joe cares, like, what's wrong? Why aren't I quite right? Why isn't the ball going in? What's wrong? And I've never been there. So, like, are you wondering, oh my gosh, have I gotten old? Am I slower? Am I hurting? And then, oh my gosh, if those things are true, am I going to get traded? Like, I can see where that really can build on you. They are, I think the thing you said there more than anything else, Scott, is they're not, you know, my old school reference would be they're not status pro cards. They're not Stratomatic baseball cards. They're not just avatars on an Xbox. They are human. They have a wife. You know, they're making – the money is over. They've all made so much it doesn't matter anymore. So it's just real life. It's like they like going to the same grocery store. They like going to the same coffee shop. They like supporting their wife who's happy. Like, honestly, like, I remember getting fired in Seattle. I don't run. I don't jog. God did not make this lard to go do that. Like, so I don't do that. And I ran 8 miles that day because I became Forrest Gump, because I figured if I kept running, I never had to tell my wife I got fired.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there literally, like, running, like, around the loop. And after, like, I think it was, like, the 10-mile mark, I realized I probably got to go tell her because I can't actually do this all day.
Right.
So, like, there's a level where if you're one of these players and you get traded – it might not be that you're a failure, but you might feel that way as you go to your wife and say, gosh, I'm sorry I didn't play better, but they just decided they have someone better and we have to pick up our lives. There's a human element of that where it's not your fault. Maybe it isn't even – maybe it's just your contract status or something else, but that's not how you're going to feel when you have to go to your wife and say, hey, we just got moved.
Yeah, we
got
to pack it up. Or you guys stay here for the rest of the season while I go live in an apartment
right,
in this city.
Which is the reality of it, right. too. Like, you're going to be on your own raising these kids because actually we don't have time because the trade deadline just happened, and then we have our all-star break trip that either we have to cancel or not take. And, oh, by the way, then I'm only there for, like – and only there. We're not going to live there next year. I'm a free agent. So, and I'm only there – we're only there for, like, 3 months, right? Like, I mean, you start walking it through, like, you're not – yeah, 100%.
Changes things a lot. All right, David Locke, he's got the call tonight. Jazz, Suns, right here, Vivint Smart Home Arena. 8 o'clock tip-off. It's on national television, so you might as well – you know, hopefully everybody could see.
Wait. You sync?
No,
it is. Television to the radio broadcast. You listen to me and Booner, and you watch Craig, Thurl, and Holly.
That's right.
And then we get the ratings on both, and everyone's happy.
See, and it's smart, too, because everybody already knows that the national guys don't respect the Jazz anyway. So there you go.
Well, most of them do, but somebody's in town tonight. So, and Mark Jones is one of the great play-by-play announcers in the league, and he's calling the play-by-play tonight. So he might have had to call Sacramento being down 50 last night, so he'll be really happy to be here tonight.
Yeah, sure.
He's one of the great play-by-play announcers that there is. But when you see, but yeah, I'll stop there because you guys can go look up who the rest of the coach.
He's David Locke. You can tune in tonight, of course, right here on the Jazz on the Jazz Radio Network. Also heard on KSL News Radio tonight as well, so you get the double dip there. So there you go, David. Thanks for hanging out with us, man. We really love it.
See you guys.
All right, there you go. 7 o'clock pregame. By the way, Tim Lacombe and Jake Scott. Don't want to miss that. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back. More to go here on the program. We got the NFL roundup around the corner. I've got something to bring up about championship weekend. I have my suspicions about these games, but stay right here with us. More to go. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network.
Time to talk Utah Jazz.
Oh, Donovan!
This is your Jazz at 30 update.
Ring the 30-point bell.
Okay, everybody. Jazz 30 update here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Head coach Quinn Snyder of the Jazz gives his thoughts on the effort of the shorthanded team last night.
Playing hard is as much of a skill as anything else. That's something that our team needs to continue to replicate night in and night out. That's something that's within our control, is playing with that level of intensity. Sometimes forget the coverage, forget the schemes. You just compete and talk, and you can make things work.
Refresh the inside or outside of your home with a five-star experience with Five-Star Painting. They've got the time, skills, and tools. FiveStarPainting.com. That's FiveStarPainting.com. NFL Roundup around the corner. Stay with us.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback. The other guy on 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
NFL Roundup brought to you by LHM Used Car Supermarket. Over 1,000 used vehicles in inventory. Shop online at LHMUsedCars.com. Hey, fellas, by the way, just by way of announcement, Valentine's Day is coming up. So go ahead and get yourself the 2 dozen rose special for just $49.99 at Jimmy's Flowers. 2 dozen roses for $49.99 at Jimmy's Flowers. Stores in Bountiful, Layton, Ogden, or jimmysflowers.com. Order early, jimmysflowers.com. Scott, the NFL, this weekend, you know, we had a stinker of a wild card weekend, and then we just had not what was a great divisional round, but what was the best weekend of playoff football probably ever in the league in terms of competitive games and just excitement, et cetera. I have the sneaking suspicion that these games, these NFC and AFC championship games are going to be stinkers. I just hope they're not. You know,
well, here's the challenge of it. Okay, you have emotional wins by the Rams, and they have to go all the way across the country, so there's a bit of a fatigue. Then you have the 49ers, same thing, and they're in a cold weather game, and you expend a lot of energy and that kind of thing, and then they got to travel and go on the road again. So it's the third week in a row that they've traveled. Remarkable that they were able to go to Dallas. They were able to go to Green Bay and win both those games. That's hard. You've got the Bengals. You know, they might be the freshest team, but they might not be the best team. You know, they've got holes. And then you have the Chiefs that were in just this insane game. I mean, just insane, right?
That takes it out of it, too. I mean, yeah. And everybody, all they've been talking about this week is how amazing that game was. Oh, and by the way, you got to win the AFC Championship game this weekend against the Bengals. I know they're going to be
For a good part of that game, the Chiefs, they thought they'd lost.
I thought they'd
lost. Emotionally, they were – you could see the guys just dejected. They were just like, oh, you know. And so it takes a toll on you. And what kind of impact does it have in the next week? It may or may not. I mean, we may be surprised. We may get the 49ers and the Bengals in the Super Bowl again 40 years later. It happened Boomer, 40 Boomer, years ago.
Wild that it was 40 years ago.
Yeah. And I was so disappointed by that Super Bowl. I
remember that. But they did it again in 89, right? 88?
Well, yeah, but that was different because you're like, who's Joe Montana? Who's the 49ers? They're like, I want the Cowboys. I want the Steelers. I want these familiar names. I don't want these
no-name people. There,
and the Cincinnati Bengals, really? It's like, and for a while it was like, Cincinnati actually might win this game. Like
the second time around,
like
too.
It, both games were like that. And, and you're just like, and the 49ers, Joe Montana was not Joe Montana. It was like yeah. And then
what was that? It was like, hey, oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, but it's the start of something.
Yeah.
Right? And right now it's kind of Joe Burrow, you know? It's like Joe
Maybe
Burrow could be at
something.
The start of something. Yeah. You remember Patrick Mahomes? It was kind of like, I remember Patrick Mahomes started playing. I was like, this is a clown. Like, is this guy really legitimate? Like, seriously.
He's shuffling around. He's trying to run a lot.
And you go, oh, this can't last.
What's up with the way he's throwing it?
Yeah, and you know, he's got this, you know,
are you convinced
weird,
now?
Beyond convinced.
Okay.
Dude's doing things no one's
There's something
done.
About – what's funny is that the era I grew up in, you know, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area when I was a kid, it was 49ers, Cowboys every
right.
other year, it seemed like, right, in the NFC Championship game. Oh my gosh, dude! You know what happened one year?
But it
this
but
is
it,
hilarious.
But it hadn't been
NFC Championship game. But we had church like for the start of it. I was none too happy as a 12-year-old. Neither was the guy who taught our Sunday school. Okay. This guy, he worked for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, like, and I never knew what he did, but I don't think he was obviously covering the game or anything. But he's a newspaper guy, and he rolled the TV in from the library, and we tuned into the Cowboys 49ers right there at the church. Boom! Not recommended, especially because my dad at that point was the particular leader of that congregation. If he would have rolled by and seen that TV, my dad's a football guy,
he
too.
He'd have stopped and watched. Come on. He'd probably be upset that you didn't tell him. What do you mean? I could have watched it, the game.
I just remember.
I'll not be interviewing anyone right now. I need to meet with the young men.
I was full on. And like TVs, you know, that are strapped to the rollers, you know, and to that. And we're like, shh, 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 shh. We're like, wow, it's a terrible. Go get a hanger from the closet.
Look,
that was us, dude.
This is when kids get impressive to me. Going to church and using technology. You know how they used to have the phones, like the flip
in
phone
in the hallway.
Like, No, the flip phone in your
yeah,
like
sure.
your cell phone.
No, they've come flip by the flip phone's
Look,
coming back, buddy.
They could have the phone in their pocket.
Uh huh.
They could be texting
while not looking at it.
While not looking at it, so you know they knew which digit actually, how many times you had to hit it to get you know through and scroll and
yeah,
and they could do it completely by braille, essentially.
Right,
is what it was.
Muscle memory on the just, on the numbers.
Just texting in church without even looking.
Hey, what's the Cowboys score? Without even looking.
I'm
up.
Sure that's what they were texting.
I know.
Yeah,
Scott. State of Utah apparently is rooting for the Bengals. According to a Twitter study, the makeup of what people have posted about which teams they want to win, the Bengals have far and away exceeded the other teams that are out there. What's funny about it is the Rams and 49ers are getting less love.
Yeah.
From supporters.
The Bengals surprises me.
Bengals are the highest, posted about team, getting the most support on Twitter of any other team on there. And I was thinking maybe because here in the state of Utah, for example, the Bengals are – people want the Bengals to beat the Chiefs. And I thought, well, that's weird. Like, who cares about the Bengals? Yeah. But I thought maybe there's enough Bronco love here that they hate the Chiefs so much that they just want to see the Bengals win.
Okay,
that could be
if you're rating these teams, which one, like, you know, 1 to 4, which one do you want to see win the most to the least?
Want to win to see?
Yeah.
Or
win? You're rooting for. Who are you rooting for the most?
Probably the Rams.
Okay. And number two?
I'll go Rams, Bengals, Chiefs, 49ers.
Huh. Interesting.
Because I don't really have a team in that. In any of these, there's not one dog in this race for me.
Well, see, I want the Rams because that's who I picked at the beginning of the year.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not because I like them.
You want to sound smart.
I just want to sound smart. Like
Scott, you sound smart all the time.
Oh, you might know what you're talking about.
You do. You sound smart.
And the Chiefs, kind of the same thing, right. Same reason. So they're 1-2. And for me, it would be Rams, Chiefs, Bengals, 49ers. I might even go 49ers above the Bengals. No, I kind of like Joe Burrow.
That's
and
so
believe
funny,
me, it has no value.
You played for the Bengals,
and
you're like,
doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. Didn't you hear my agent say, look, this is all transactional?
You're like, that is
everything's transactional.
Yeah.
That was a bad move.
Scott, tomorrow we're going to be from 3 to 6 p.m. during our show at the Hot Tub Factory Outlet there in Draper.
Are we going to be in the hot tub?
I have been trying to push it, but I don't think that our doctors would sign off on it here at the station.
I'd love to be in the hot tub.
Full show, 3 hours in the hot tub, not recommended.
Well, I wouldn't go the whole show. I mean, I, you know.
You get out periodically.
Kinda, you know,
just imagine Scott toweling himself off, putting the headset on. Some of us almost dying. No, we're not going to get in the hot tub, although the hot tubs will be there. So Hot Tub Factory Outlet in Draper, right next to Cowabunga Bay. It's right there in those outlets right
there.
Right
by my house.
Hot Tub Factory Outlet. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. 2 Minute Drills next. Stay with us. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. It is The Zone. It is 97.5, 1280 The Zone. It is The Zone Sports Network. KSLSports.com is where you can go over and hit up the digital story side of things. Our program and our station is powered by KSLSports.com. Scott Mitchell across from me. I'm Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us. We fire up some music at this time of the night, usually, Scott. In the last two nights, apparently, I've neglected to ask you, what exactly is this music doing
on our
show?
It's not like I'm counting or anything, because it's
normally you'll say,
the only thing I get to introduce on our entire show.
Like, I have to get over it.
Yeah, it's like you do everything, and I don't get to do anything, and I just got to get to talk every once in a while. Oh, so now I'm getting the silent treatment.
No, I gave you the floor. I put my hand out in front of me.
Would you like me to explain what this
is? I asked you already, but you were mumbling over me.
All right, well, let me tell you what this part of the show is all about. It's, you know, late in a football game. You got to go down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown. And you do not have a lot of time. I mean, all you need is 13 seconds now. It's not like it's a big deal. So you got to hurry. You don't have a lot of time, so you hurry. Well, did I say that already? Well, our show's the same way. We still have a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy. Everyone gets a trophy today, 2 COVID shots, a booster shot, and a plethora of desserts.
Feel better now?
No, I don't, actually. I feel rusty.
I was going to say, two nights of not doing it? You sound like the guys with COVID coming back from the Jazz.
Yeah.
I don't feel right. Yeah, the 2 minute drill. Scott, you explained it.
Well, let me tell you
something about donuts.
No, here, let me give you one. Al Michaels, ESPN's considering him for Monday Night Football. He does the Sunday night. Why in the world would he ever want to do this? I don't know. And would Al Michaels actually change?
I don't think you want to be a part of that. I don't think you want to be a part of the ESPN.
You don't
want to
go near. No, heavens
no. Network television is still an important deal. And on top of it,
Sunday Night Football is where it's
happening. Sunday Night Football has become Monday Night Football from when I was a kid.
Yes. I love Sunday Night Football, the way they do it. I love Al Michaels. I love Chris Collinsworth. I think it's great. Can I tell you my Al Michaels?
Chris Collinsworth's insights good, do you think? Like,
yes.
I like him. And then I thought, well, but what is a former
he
pro?
Actually, he actually spends a lot of time preparing for that. And he's very timely and very accurate in a lot of things he says. Can I share my Al Michaels story with you?
Yeah.
So Al Michaels is doing a game of ours. It's a Monday night game, when Monday night mattered. And, of course, they have mics on the field, right? So I'm calling the cadence. You know, Green 85, Omaha, Omaha, right? Doing that.
Sure.
And all of a sudden I stop and the whistle blows and I say a swear word. I say poo-poo.
I said a cuss.
Right? And you can hear it on the telecast.
And is that Scott Mitchell just said a swear?
No, without blinking, Al Michaels goes, I don't think that last part was part of the cadence.
Al Michaels' timing is impeccable.
Yeah. And then he says, do you believe in miracles?
Yeah, that was not during your game. But
anyways, I thought that was fun.
He should bust out the do you believe in miracles call when the Detroit Lions win the Super Bowl.
Right, yes.
So,
yeah.
Iconic. Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, you're a team. Stay on Sunday Night Football. That's where I want to see you. But if the money's good. I mean, the money's already amazing.
Who cares?
Al Michaels, by the way, I think he does like a steak every night, something like that. He's like some... he's got a handful of discrepancies when it comes to
the... He kind of cuts against the norm.
Yeah. Scott, the Jags are not that close to hiring a pro coach or a coach, are they? Is that what we're getting from all of this?
Who?
The Jags. Do they have a coach yet?
Byron Leftwich.
Is he going to be the guy? They're just interviewing him.
Oh, I thought he was the guy.
He's not the guy yet.
Oh.
But that doesn't mean...
I'll bet he's going
to
be the guy.
They're attempting to finalize a contract.
Yeah, he's going to be the
guy. You think he's going to be the guy?
Yeah, heck yeah.
What do you convince this guy? What do you tell him? It's not just the money. Because you're going
who?
To... Byron Leftwich is a team he played for. What's
because
your pitch to him?
Because it's his team.
You're running the thing.
And look, when you're Byron Leftwich and you're hanging out with Bruce Arians and you kind of get tutored through him, you know what you gain? What you already probably
what?
Have?
What?
A massive ego. And you know what you think you can do? You can turn around anything. It's like, look, I'm a guy who understands the Jacksonville culture. I was a player here. I understand what it means to the people here. I've been trained and I've been groomed by some of the best people, the best minds in the NFL. I get it. I know how to, you know, we've won championships on teams that I've coached on. Understand that whole mindset. Yeah, Byron Leftwich, I think, is a no-brainer. Love to see that.
Byron Leftwich, 10,400 yards passing in his career. Scott Mitchell, close to 16,000.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would have been closer than that. That he would have had more is what I mean. Not than you, but more than 10,000.
Right.
And we heard his name a lot for a long time. Didn't play a lot,
I
guess
actually.
Not. For Scott Mitchell in this hour, I'm Alex Curie. We're going to
come back for more?
Might as well.
Let's do it.
Let's keep going here. Jazz and Suns tonight, don't forget, right here on the Utah Jazz Radio Network. Stay with us, more to go. It is 97.5 1280 The Zone, The Zone Sports Network.
The new Zone lineup is here. With the best coverage of the sports you love and the teams. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back. Final segment here on the program before you get into some Jazz pregame on the Utah Jazz Radio Network. You can also hear it, besides right here on 97.5 1280 The Zone tonight, you can hear it on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. So no excuse not to listen to the broadcast with David Locke and Ron Boone, man. Got to have some Locke and Booner as part of your night. And then, as you said, and as we were talking about, too, tune in on the TV broadcast to the locals here, too. Bowler,
yeah.
Thurl, Holly, boom. Got it.
Some people are scared of that technology, you know, jerry rig. But it makes sense.
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah, don't trust the national guys. They don't. Yeah.
Tim Lacombe and Jake Scott going to bring you the pregame coming up here in just a few moments. In the meantime, Scott Rob Gronkowski. Gronk says that if he was going to decide today, he would retire today.
Mm-hmm.
For the second time.
I think probably almost every player in the NFL would
That's
retire
kind of
this,
the idea.
The minute the season's over.
Well, he says, you know, in particular, he's got to wait. He says, give me a couple months here. Send me on a cruise. Let me hit the frat party circuit for a while, and then I'll come back and tell you if I'm going to play. How much of it? He says he's willing to play without Tom Brady being the quarterback. Why would you want to, though?
Well, I mean, if you still have a good team and you still have a desire to play, I mean, you want to go out and he's had a great run. I mean, he's... You know, when you have the opportunity to play with good players, boy, it is such a treat. You know, to have a great player like that to throw the ball to, but to be the guy to have a great quarterback to throw you the ball, yeah, you really value it. I don't know that Gronk has really even understood or appreciated how great that is to, because he knows him so well and he understands where to throw the ball and the situations they get into, and
you know, it could get frustrating potentially with a new guy that doesn't understand you like Tommy does to him.
Tommy.
Well, he kind of calls him Tommy.
Hey, Tommy.
Tommy.
You gonna play? Now, if I'm out there on the field, look for my big hands. They're big white gloves. I still have no idea why USAA is like. And Gronk will be trying to get
a
membership.
Really, it's kind of a creepy commercial.
How so? Well, he's gonna pretend. He's gonna be on the edge of pretending that he's in the armed services.
It feels almost fraudulent. Like he's trying to.
That their message is, look, I know we've been putting out these USAA commercials.
We know how great you are, Gronk. You're amazing. You're incredible. But this is for the
military.
They
had to dial it back because they were like, oh, we didn't make it clear. You can't. Not everybody can call. We got to do a commercial where Gronk can't call. All right. Okay. I think that's the end of it. Yeah. Let's jump out right here. For Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery, we'll be at the Hot Tub Factory outlet tomorrow in Draper. So come out
in
and see us. High five, Scott. And so for Scott, I'm Alex. Jeremy, our producer. Well done today. More to go. Stay right here with us. Jazz Radio Network pregame next.
Go Jazz.
975 1280 The Zone.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.